Blog Talk Radio.
Blog Talk Radio.
This is AppSats Radio, help for partners after sexual betrayal. We talk about it here.
Betrayal trauma.
We are AppSats certified clinical partner specialists and coaches who have been trained to help navigate you through this crisis. There is nothing we won't talk about.
Sometimes listeners want to know about triggers.
I'm dealing with the aftermath of my husband's affairs, and he still works the same job that he did when he was acting out. It's a job that allows him to hide his goings-on and when he stated was the previous trigger for his acting out. The whole 16 and a half years we've been together, he's acted out. In the beginning, what I thought it was just pornography. It ended up being, I found out 2.5 years ago, he had been with multiple prostitutes. I only found out a very small portion of that until about a month ago. How do you cope with all of that when you still have to deal with unavoidable triggers?
Well, of course you would feel traumatized by hearing all that information. And I got to tell you, Stephanie, that's a staggered disclosure. That's finding out little bits and pieces about your husband's behavior throughout a time period, making you feel insecure, unsure, and unsafe. So what we got to do is set up a situation whereby you get with a specialist to do a formal disclosure so you can hear everything at one time in a safe environment. That's right. We're partners out there everywhere. Our mission is to help you feel safe. You know we're sponsored by AppSats, and AppSats is that organization that trains clinicians and coaches on how to be safe. You know, they know that as a partner, you don't know what to do. You're in crisis. Even after the crisis is over and you're with your significant other, you're not sure what to do to maintain a really important experience whereby you can live as normally as possible and decide, what do I need for safety and security? And then, in addition to that, decide, how am I going to keep this relationship going? Do I even want to restore this relationship? And boy, those are questions that we know you're probably not going to be ready to answer until you get stabilized. And so this show allows us to interview the experts, people that are really capable of knowing what partner betrayal is all about, what sexual betrayal is. They've been through it. Some have written books about it. Others have gotten trained to help other partners. And so this is a plethora of information, and you're going to love listening to Betrayal Recovery Radio, sponsored by AppSats. I am Carol Jurgensen-Sheets, and I am your host every Thursday. And today we have Kat Clark on, and this is an amazing woman who has written 3 different books. She has written, they're really, it's her memoir, Get Off My Porch, Book 1. Book 2 is Sitting on the Porch, Swing. And then the third book is Sweeping the Porch, Books on Boundaries. So today we're going to be talking about Book 2, which is when you're on that emotional roller coaster and you're feeling some PTSD, some post-traumatic stress disorder, and you're trying to figure out, what can I do to stay healthy, to feel safe, and to take good care of myself? So she's got some tips for you. And, you know, these books are small and powerful. They have a lot of good information in them. And so I am so happy that we have her on the line Because clearly, one of the things I know is that if you've been through it, you're much more likely to know how to handle things. And that's what life's all about, getting through the hard stuff. You know that, right? So, I am going to, I've just got a whole host of calls, and I'm trying to figure out where Miss Cat is. So, let's see if I can take a caller. Let's see if this is Cat or if this just happens to be a caller who's wanting some information. Because, truly, I am a believer in answering as many questions as we can about sexual addiction and partner betrayal. Hi, welcome to Betrayal Recovery Radio. How can we help? And let's see here. We may be having just a little bit of technical difficulty. Hi, welcome to Betrayal Recovery Radio. How can we help? Okay. Well, one of the things that I know is when you run into an obstacle, you have to make sure it becomes an opportunity. And I love the fact that whenever there is something that is not going right, then what you do is you figure out what would make it better. Now, clearly, one of the things that I believe is that no matter how bad your life is, also make it better by saying, what is working in my life? And you know, there's always something that's working, no matter how bad, no matter how traumatizing. There are always things to be thankful for or for things to look at and say, you know, that isn't so bad. And that's what I want to know is what in your life would make a difference? What would you say in your life is working for you? And when you do that, then you're able to balance that chaos with a little bit of serenity. And you know, that's what we're looking for in good self-care, serenity. And the reason is, serenity is really tough to attain when you've been through a crisis. And that means sometimes we have to go digging for it. I'm going to ask you, in your life, what is something that you've actually felt good about? You know, what is something that truly you believe is a positive in the midst of this crisis? And I really believe that it is so important for you to have a word for the year. Let me tell you about this. I'm not one for setting goals as much as I am for picking a word that you want to integrate into your world. And when I say integrate, I really mean what is a word that you would like to have in your lifetime, but certainly for 2019, that is positive, that you can integrate into your everyday routine. Kind of hard to know, isn't it? I mean, truly, I had a woman today, she's a partner, and she said, my word for the year is believe. And when I said that to her, you know, when I said, believe, what do you need to believe? And she said, I need to believe in myself. I need to believe that I can get through this. I need to believe in my husband. I need to believe that his recovery is true and that time will tell me that it is true. And then I need to believe in my higher power because I have got to know that somebody else has my back besides me. So her word for the year is believe. I'm going to ask Kat to come on the phone and to share a little bit about her belief in herself right now. So, Clark, welcome to Betrayal Recovery Radio. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you, Carol?
Well, I am doing so well, and I tell you, I was so excited to have you on because you have really taken an obstacle, obviously, partner betrayal, sexual betrayal, and you have turned it into an opportunity to help other partners, to help educate the community, and probably even to help yourself as you are writing your three books. So tell me a little bit about what made you decide, I am going to put pen to paper and make this a reality?
Actually, I wanted to know more about what caused the addiction versus why was he being so, you know, mistreating me. And so once we found out that he was addicted to pornography through a specialist, you know, in sexual addictions, I took it upon myself. I mean, I love him. I took it upon myself to see what's wrong. You know, I wanted to know what caused this, and we did the counseling and stuff and went through I went through the timeline, and a lot of these addicts, they don't have a chance because of past events, you know, they're being raised and everything else. So my main thing was not necessarily to help him because I had enough problems of my own, but it was more about what happened, and I wanted to understand why and the behaviors and the, you know, what to watch out for with an addict so I could help myself.
Well, and I know that in your book and in our conversations, you have really said that it makes a huge difference when you can get to a specialist that's trained in sexual addiction and partner betrayal, that marital counselors mean well, but if they don't understand about this condition, they're probably not going to advise you well. So you were married for 19 years and
20.
You definitely, 20 years. You sought
now,
counseling.
Yeah.
When did you get to that specialist?
Actually, we spent thousands of dollars because probably as you and the listeners well know, that addicts will put the blame on you. So I figured I was the problem. I went for personal counseling for my insecurity, blah, blah, blah. And it wasn't until I just had enough that I insisted he go to a professional in sexual addiction. That's when, you know, the other counselors, they would not want to talk about pornography, sex. Somehow, if you put the word sex before an addiction, they don't want to talk about it. It's the monster in the closet. So once I, you know, we went to counseling and he was diagnosed as being an addict, that was the best money we ever spent. And I would never, you know, I would never go back to, you know, marriage counselors or, you know, private counselor, of course, in the specialty. But we wasted a lot of time and money, that's all I'll say.
Well, I'm glad you said that because in actuality, Kat, this show is sponsored by APSAS, and that's the Association of Partner Specialists. And we are trained in sex addiction and partner trauma, and I'm a CSAT, so I'm a certified sexual addiction therapist, and I could not agree with you more that it just expedites the process, and it'll let you know that, no, as a partner, you're not crazy, but in some ways, sex addicts have to protect their addiction by making you feel crazy, by making you feel like you have the problem. So
absolutely.
Can I ask you a couple of questions? Because I really feel like you have a great grasp on this situation and on how it plays havoc with the relationship. What signs did you see that made you believe that there was a problem with intimacy?
Oh, well, he basically stopped paying attention to me in the bedroom and intimately, and that was only after we'd been married 3 months. I worked in a health club before, and that's how I met him. And I started watching after we started dating, and he would objectify women, stare at the younger women, and, you know, we'd be out in public, and he didn't just stare, he studied their body. And I confronted him 3 months into the marriage, and, of course, he told me I was, you know, insecure and it was my imagination. But then, you know, he wanted me after I would observe him objectifying women. And then there was, I found pornographic sites.
Why do you think that was? What do you think was going on there that he would want you after you caught him objectifying?
Well, that's an easy one, to fulfill his fantasy of another woman. Well, that's younger woman, which, of course, you know, gave me a poor body image.
Oh, yeah. So what you're saying is that he used you, he objectified them and you by using your body as the vehicle for his sexual arousal.
Yes.
And yet he used them as the fantasy.
Absolutely. And I confronted him about it. And, you know, of course, you know, well, he denied it. I mean, actually, three months into the relation or into the marriage, I started seeing it. So if you put it all together, you know, I spent 19 years jumping around from counselor to counselor because we only went a year ago in September to the intensive for the specialty in sexual addiction. I also found some inappropriate stuff on the internet, and of course, you know, it's like, oh, I had those before we got married. I was a single guy. All guys do it. Now that I have you, and he deleted it, so he was always a step ahead of me, deleting the history.
Yeah, they do stay a step ahead. There's no doubt about it. That addiction brain is by far the most, it's like it's on steroids. It doesn't want to get caught.
Oh, my.
And it also wants. Yeah. So now, how did it make you feel when he lost interest in you sexually? I know your book talks about it, but how did it make you feel?
Well, Carol, I mean, this was my second marriage. I was 48 years old when I married him, and I figured, oh, wow, this is my life partner. He's mature. He loves God and all that. But it broke my heart. I mean, because he paid so much attention to me when we were dating, and I thought he was sexually attracted to me. And he was really careful in the dating phase because I broke up with him early in the relationship because of objectifying women. But, you know, I do the silly thing like, oh, once we're married, things will be fine. But they got worse. So I started to feel like I was doing something wrong to cause his neglect. So I did everything I could to get his attention, and it didn't work. And then I took that dangerous dive and decided I wasn't good enough and took things very personal. And that's the biggest mistake
we make.
That
is what all partners do. Yeah,
that's miserable, absolutely.
Yeah. And so at what point, now this is a tough question, at what point did you decide, and it could have been months, years, you know, decades, what point did you decide it isn't me? It's not me, it's him.
Well, are you talking about trust?
No, I'm
I mean,
talking
when did
about
I...
you realizing that you were not the problem. It wasn't that you weren't good enough. It was that he had an addiction that took him places that he had trained his brain to go.
I'm not sure I'm understanding the question. You mean the rejection, or when did I discover it was him? With the problem.
You just got done saying that you did what every partner does. You felt like you weren't good enough when you realized that he was. Yeah,
I'm with you now. Actually, I didn't until I went to counseling and I learned about gaslighting. And I figured out that, how they manipulate, and that he was actually, gaslighters can manipulate you through lies, and they play the victim, and you start to begin, you're the problem. And then I started thinking I was the perpetrator, but then when I found out what they do, that changed the whole game. I knew it was him and not me. I studied the addiction. I learned the behaviors of addicts, and I watched. I didn't listen to his words. I watched his behavior.
You were really smart, and I'd like more partners to be able to do that, to watch them walk their talk and see if they can sync. Right?
Well, actually, I was very angry. I went from rage to hatred. I'm ashamed to admit that. But once I realized, and I really, I can't say enough about learning the addiction. It's so important because, that way you take your power back. And you think, that's not my fault. It's my partner's fault. Taking that power back is everything.
Well, I 100% agree, and that's what all three of your books are about, is taking your power back. And you can't do that until you really understand about sexual addiction. And it's interesting you say that, Kat, because I, as a CSAT, the first thing that I do with a sex addict is I help them to break denial. I help them to see that this is something they can't control. I help them to see how it has totally destroyed relationships. I help them to see how it's taken their own self-esteem down.
Right.
But the second task that I do is I say, you've got to understand this addiction. You can't just trust me that I know what I'm doing. You also have to understand your own addiction. And so what I hear you saying, as a loving, caring partner who was being gaslit, who thought there was something wrong with her, that once you really understood about the sexual addiction, you no longer took it as personally. You realized that this addiction was about him. It affected you, but it wasn't because of you.
Yes, and at that point, it took me a little while, but I tossed out the word victim. I became a victor.
Oh, I like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you went through a lot of medical issues at the same time that this was all going down. Can you share with our listening audience some of the conditions that you were dealing with medically?
Sure.
In addition, yeah.
Yeah. Actually, I started out with panic attacks, insomnia, emotional breakdowns, and over time, shame to admit it, I caved in, gave him total control because I was very sick. And then I spent years going to doctors and specialists, and I was diagnosed with a compromised immune system. And, of course, that news put me into a deeper depression. And so I have came close to dying twice in the hospital with anaphylactic shock, got there just in time. My throat was closing up. But the depression and everything else, I ended up with contact dermatitis. I can't be around preservatives and personal household products. People spray something in the air, cats running for her life. And they said it's a lifetime sentence, but I'm determined to beat it with natural herbs, so we'll see what happens there. But it I was just dragging around. I was lifeless. I just didn't care.
Well, yeah, it's kind of like, did you get those conditions before you discovered he was a sex addict, while you were discovering he was a sex addict, or after all that information was given to you?
Gosh, I'm going to have to say all three, because I had some early signs. There were red flags all over, and I missed them, you know, but I had some early signs. I mean, I started getting depressed month three of the marriage, but then when I started noticing him out in public and different things, I actually had my first bout with this, I would say, 6-7 years ago. I mean, I broke out to the point where my skin fell off. It was horrific. And, I mean, I didn't think I was going to die. I expected to, Carol. I expected to. But then I put on my big girl panties and started studying more about natural herbs and oils, and that's what saved me. Just helping myself.
I know you are so resourceful, and that's what I really admired about your books. They give so much hope, strength, and recovery to partners. You must feel really proud of yourself.
I am. And I'm a Christian. Couldn't done it without God. And once I found out that he was the one with the problem, my hatred turned into rage and anger, and I thought, you are not taking me down.
Oh,
and so I fought for myself, and I win.
Well, you're a very strong woman, and we've got a caller on the line. Would you mind taking a call if I open
up
the lines a little bit? Okay.
Sure.
Let me see. All right. Well, welcome to Betrayal Recovery Radio. This is Kat Clark and Carol Jurgensen-Sheets. How can we help? Are you there? For whatever reason, we're having trouble hooking up with that, so let's see if we can take another caller. This is Kat Clark and Carol Jurgensen-Sheets. Do you have a question for Kat or myself? I hear a baby in the background. Okay. And you know what, Kat? I want to ask you something while we try to figure out what's going on with the line. I want to know, how did you end up handling the rejection?
Oh, boy. Actually, I'd have to say I didn't in the early parts of it. I did exactly the opposite of what the counselors told me not to do. I took it personally. I was ended up on prednisone, gained weight. So, and during that time, he instructed me to not approach him sexually because it would put too much pressure on him. So I didn't handle the rejection well. I just crawled into a hole and stayed there. You know, to say, well, you know, you just stand up, do this, do that, when you're down so low that you don't even love yourself. That's a bad place to be.
Well, I bet lots of partners can understand how low you can go when you're feeling that kind of rejection. And, you know, I always say, rejection is an emotional thing, but I got to tell you, too, when you've been through this kind of trauma, that interior cingulate in the brain, it gets activated, and that's where rejection is housed. And so that thing is on 24/7. So it doesn't help the normal person to feel that partner betrayal and have their brain kind of malfunction because they've been so hurt. So what did you do to take back your power and say, I no longer am going to allow myself to feel this rejected?
Well, this is a tough one to do, but kudos to me, I've done it. You don't give away your power. That's the biggest thing. And the addict, and I say in your partner, because you have to learn how to separate the addict from the person, which is very difficult to do. But that relieved a lot of my stress because it put him, I mean, even though he's an addict, does not excuse what he's done to me, does not excuse the behavior. But they don't care about what you're going through as long as they get their way. They have their own demons to fight. They'll manipulate and control you if you let them. My biggest thing that I would say is I learned about boundaries. Book 3 of my series is all about boundaries, and that helped me more than anything is to stand up and say, no, I will not allow this. I have boundaries, and I have to give him a big pat on the back. He respects my boundaries. Now, we are separated. We've been separated for about a year now, and we have remained good friends, which is difficult to do. Not everybody can do that. But, you know, and the most important thing is I realized it wasn't my fault, and he is responsible for cleaning up the mess he's made. But I can't stand there and not do anything. I have to take my power back and say, I know who I am. I know who I used to be, and I got back there. They'll take you down if you let them.
Well, I absolutely agree with you. And so would you give our listening audience a couple of examples of the boundaries that you set with him that you felt were really helpful?
Yes. Well, once we separated, here's the thing. I had health issues along with emotional issues because of the addiction. So stress is not my friend. You know, if I got stressed, I would break out. And so I told him, I said, you may not come over unless you call me and I allow you to come over. Respect my space because, unfortunately, I can't help with his recovery. He can't help with mine. We can help each other in certain ways by not, you know, talking about the past and digging up and putting our gloves on. So, you know, that's one thing, and he has always respected that. If he's here, he does not touch me sexually. Sex is off the table. You do not touch my body. And I gave him the red zone and the green zone. He's respected that. But I also have PTSD. I did not mention that. And if you get to the point where you have PTSD because of another person's behavior, you are in trouble. So if I have I'm sorry, go ahead.
That's exactly what I was going to say. Describe some of those symptoms. And you were going to say, if I have flashbacks,
I wouldn't call them dreams, although I do have recurring dreams. I will have a flashback, like if something, a commercial comes on that's, you know, this woman's scantily dressed and I caught him staring at so much that he didn't know I was in the room. There's certain things, or you might be out somewhere and see a person that you know he's studied in the past. I have intrusive images. I remember the times where I didn't exist. I remember, and I will not go into detail about this, I remember times in the bedroom where I knew he wasn't with me. That's all I'm going to say. But, you know, I have intrusive images. Certain things that he does, I expect that he's going to mistreat me. And it's fear. It's straight up fear. And with PTSD, if I let one thing in, then I may have, you know, it's like a bad rerun of a movie. I just get inundated with all the flashbacks over the 22 years I've been with him. And you can't sort them out. So I studied PTSD a lot. And in the first two books especially, I really go into detail about, you know, how to kind of combat that. I mean, I still have episodes, but I'm getting real good at it. So it's hard when, you know, they're trying to do their best to respect you now, but it's all about trust. They have to regain your trust.
Well, exactly, and that does take a long time. I mean, it takes time and it takes them walking that talk. You get to see those behavioral corrections, don't you?
Yeah, but they're pretty crafty.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't mean that disrespectful, but, you know, he'll be doing something and then the next minute he's trying to gaslight me and I call him out on it. And we've had a few bouts where it's been some voices raised and he will eventually cave in. I was the one that caved in to stop the argument and I would accept the blame. But I told him, I said, don't you gaslight me. Well, he kind of runs in circles because I'm really educated and I can catch him now. That's what I say, get an education. Get an education for yourself first to be able to handle this. Because if they know. Yeah.
If they know what?
If they know that you don't know what they're doing, they're not going to stop. You can help them.
Mm-hmm.
Call them out. You can help them.
All right. Now, I want to ask you, because not everybody in this listening to this show is as sophisticated as you. So I want to ask, can you explain to our listening audience what gaslighting is?
Oh, yeah. Okay. The best way I can define it is what they'll do to get control. They'll manipulate you through lies. They cry at the drop of a hat. They play the victim. They talk like, I don't know why you stay with me. I'm so awful. You deserve better than I. I'm nothing. And, of course, you're going to go around, no, honey, you're not that bad and everything. And so you're starting to turn around, and then you feel guilty, you know, because you're insecure and you don't feel good about yourself. But he had me believing I was the perpetrator. But they will cut themselves down to make you feel sorry for them, and then you start believing you're the problem because you picked on them.
Okay,
you start believing
that
their lies, and
sense.
They'll cover their lies with lies and lies. The lying's huge.
And so now, you know, now that you've separated and you're friends and you are still maintaining really good boundaries, do you see him working a stronger recovery program?
I'm so very proud of him. Yes. He does a webcam once a week, and he is on meetings, I think, 5-6 times a week. He's actually conducting meetings now. He's in the 12 step. I'm not real sure. I think he's finishing step 9, you know, making amends. And he's trying really hard. And actually, he's beginning to catch himself, which is awesome. Because he'll say, oh, I said that wrong, or I didn't mean it that way. He's catching himself. And that, to me, is huge. Because for me to call him out on everything, he's like, yeah, no, yeah, I did it, maybe I didn't. But when he says, I said that wrong, or I shouldn't have done that, I'm sorry. I see him, he's grabbing a hold of all the literature he can find, books. He's got a huge support team of men that they're calling him, and they just are free to call each other and support each other if they're having a bad time or something. And he's got a huge network of buddies now, and I'm really happy for him.
Yeah, that is progress. And what we know about recovery and addiction is that you look for the progress, not the perfection. But when they get to the point of recovery where they're catching themselves and recorrecting and redirecting, that's always a good sign. I am talking with Kat Clark, and she has written 3 books. And
I have number 4 coming out.
Oh, my gosh. Tell everybody the names of your books. and the fourth one that'll be coming out, and how they can get a hold of them.
You can buy them on Amazon, books. You can get them about anywhere. But the first one is called Get Off My Porch. That's when I asked him to leave. He had to get out of my way. I couldn't recover with him here because he too many memories. The second one is called Sitting on the Porch Swing. It's called the Porch Series. There's four books. Sitting on the Porch Swing is about, you know, getting to know somebody. I did not know this man. I didn't know the man. I knew the addict. And so this is like, where is he? I know he's in there, but he gave the addict control, and that's all I knew. So Sitting on the Porch Swing is about getting to really know the person that's trapped inside. So I'm getting to know him all over again in a good way. The third one is called Sweeping the Porch. That's my favorite of all the books. It's about boundaries. And you have to, I give a little example in there, like a patio. You know, if you walk on a patio barefoot, you step on a rock or a thorn or something, you know, it's a dangerous place to be. You have to clear that out. You have to get the garbage out of your head, out of your mind, and you have to have a clean place where you feel safe. And with the partners, I'm going to jump in here and say it's all about safety. I never felt safe with him. And so that's book number three, and it talks about toxic relatives. It talks about teenagers, blended families, addicts. I had a ball making that book. And then the last one is called My Porch Light. My Porch Light is about me recovering, about the ups and downs of recovery, and how I have conquered so many obstacles. And it tells about how he's doing now with his recovery and me. And that book should be released end of February, I think, or 1st of March. They can actually go to YouTube and watch the trailers of the first three.
And how can they see those?
You go to YouTube and just type in the title of the book.
Well, I actually have seen them, and they're very good. They're very short. They're very to the point. And I think they leave a lot of hope, strength, and recovery. And so I would encourage everybody to get this series. And, again, you can go to Amazon.com. And so I just got a couple of additional questions if I can ask you. I want to know what advice you would give our listening audience about dealing with their emotions.
Well, like I said before, don't give away your power. You have to find you. You get lost in the shuffle because you become a different person as well. You know, when you live with an addict, you become a totally different person. You're so full of anger and, you know, so many negative thoughts. And when you learn the boundaries, if boundaries are hard to do, there's a fear about setting boundaries. People might get mad, might say go away. You know, that's all right. But you need to learn how to effectively use them. And I can't stress enough about educating yourself. And like you, Carol, the people that are online right now, this woman cares. Carol cares. She's a godsend. And you need to listen, and you need to tap in at some point every day and feed your mind good stuff, educational stuff. But the main thing is stand up, be who God meant you to be, take your power back, and I'm going to tell you, it is such a relief to be able to be me again. I love it.
Well, and you can hear that hope in your voice, and you can see that, you know, as you're reading this book, you're like, yes, I can feel this woman getting stronger and stronger and stronger. And it's, you know, I always say obstacles can be opportunities, and truly, we would never ask this to happen to you, but you have taken it. You've grown stronger as a woman, as a human being, as a Christian sister, and you're giving back now, aren't you?
Absolutely. I turned my negatives into positives. I fall down sometimes still, but boy, I jump up a lot quicker than what I used to. And you talked about progress, not perfection. I actually bought him a plaque that he has on his table in his house. Progress, not perfection. That's odd that you said that. but it's so freeing. I mean, I spent a lot of time down on my face with his foot on my back, and I stood up and said, no more. I'm worth it. I'm worth it. I'm a good woman. I was a good wife.
Absolutely.
And so he didn't give me what I needed. I'll go find it. I spent enough time in the wasteland.
Yeah, and you're finding it just even in spending this hour with us. I mean, you are finding it by giving back and by having so much to contribute. Now, I want to ask you, how is your emotional state today? And I know you said that you're getting stronger physically, but how is that physical health? Is your skin still falling off?
No. Actually, my physical health, I'm doing very well because I'm doing natural herbs, remedies, and I gained weight because I ended up taking 10 rounds of prednisone. I needed to lose 15 pounds. It is gone. And I'm happy to report that I've been able to rekindle the friendship with him. But I made the decision, and I haven't told you this, Carol. I have a fifth book that I'm working on right now, and it's all about the natural herbs and you know, meditation, that type of thing, and just a general all around how to take care of your body. But physically, I feel good. I'm sleeping well. I'm eating well. I look forward to right now the sun shining in Illinois. I get up, and I'm grateful that I'm still here. But I took control.
Yes, you did. And, you know, I'm a big believer in we have to honor feelings. And you went through shock and grief and anger and sadness and, of course, anxiety. That's that post-traumatic stress. And
you can
really hear that you feel much better about yourself and you're no longer taking this personal. I mean, it definitely personally affects you, what you've been through in your life. But you really have turned it around to give back. And so as we begin to end our segment today, you know, there are listeners on this podcast, and they're actually callers that for whatever reason we can't get to today. So I want to let them know that if you have a question, you can always email me at carol@caroltthecoach.com. I know, Kathy, you kind of keep your email separate. You gotta be able to focus on your writing and your give back in that way. How can you let us know when book number 4 and number 5 comes out?
Well, Carol, I'll send you one. How's that?
And I love that. I want our listening audience to know it was November 7th or 8th. And I was in a training partners, partner coaches and clinicians about trauma. And I got this information about Kathy's book or Kath's book. And I just said to myself, I've got to contact this woman and see if she'll come on the show. And she said, I want you to read the book before you even book me because I want to make sure that it's right for your show. And so I feel like that was a God thing. So often when this happens to partners, to women, and even to men, you know, because men can be betrayed by their wives. When this happens and they're Christians, they can feel like God betrayed them too. Did you ever have that experience?
No, never. Never. Not that God betrayed me. No. No.
You never said to yourself, how could you do this? How could you let this happen to me, God?
No, I would think, why aren't you helping me? He didn't help me because I had to learn by falling down. And you're much stronger if you fall down first and have to climb your way out. You get so much power that it's unbelievable. But I gave up on myself. I gave up on my husband, but I did not give up on God. It's the only reason I would pray, please, please fix this. Make him stop doing this. And, you know, my prayers weren't being answered the way I expected it to. He had a plan for me, and right now I'm putting that plan into action by talking to you. He wanted me. I mean, I'm bold. I'm not shy, as you can probably tell. But at the same time, I had to be drugged through the dirt so I could speak up and say, I want to help people. My biggest desire right now is to speak, to talk, to speak, go anywhere and help people because I know what it feels like. And I would caution your listeners, don't let this go too far. Do not let this go too far. You get a hold of it. You take your power back, you stand up and say, that's enough. But you got to help yourself. You got to go to counseling like Carol, anytime she's on. You know, you're amazing, Carol. I'll just say that. But you have to feed yourself daily with information and just get that strength back.
Oh, thank you very much. And I think those are great words of wisdom because truly, so oftentimes, as you can imagine, and you probably were there too, the partner comes in and she's got a 50-minute session and she wants to talk about her husband for the full 50 minutes. And I always let her talk some because that's how I can educate her about sexual addiction. I can let her vent and share her grief and her anger and her sadness. But then we always spend time talking about, as a partner, what can you do for you? How can you restore your sanity this week? Or at least today, what can you do for self-care? And actually, book two is about self-care.
And, I'm big into that, yeah.
Yeah, that book has a chapter in book two called, of course, Sitting on the Porch Swing, that's titled Emotional Roller Coaster. And in that chapter, you talk about those mood swings and the fears and how to get back in, I always say, an equilibrium. And, of course, that takes a long time, but you can definitely, there's always things you can do to bring back some self-care into your life. Wouldn't you agree?
Absolutely. And you don't need to spend time punishing the addict. You need to spend time healing yourself. I believe that.
And
you know, why punish them? They got a mess to clean up too. I'm not defending them. I'm just being real.
Oh, I so agree with you. And so, as we end today, tell our listening audience what you do for self-care right now in 2019.
Oh, that's going to be fun. Actually, God gave me the gift of being creative. You know, I'm a licensed jewelry designer. I play the piano. I get up. I read uplifting books, you know, mysteries, stuff like that. I am very diligent about my body, taking care of my body, trying to eat right. I travel with a cousin of mine. We do a lot of traveling together. And I wake up and I just say, this is going to be a good day. Sometimes it's not, but I start out that way. And at the end, you know, I can always say most of them are good days. And if I have a problem, I'll work through it. But, you know, get out there. I've contacted my friends that I've neglected for years because I was such a mess that I didn't want to be around anybody. I just decided I'm going to live now and be who I'm supposed to be. I have a dog who's my best friend. Her and I hang out, and I have gotten a positive attitude about life versus a negative attitude about, poor me, I've been abused. Yeah.
That is really a good list of both mental activities and physical activities. Now, I'm going to give you a challenge. I was just saying at the beginning of the show that one of the things that I ask my clients to do, both male and female, sex addicts, partners, and people that are just dealing with depression and anxiety in general, to pick a word that reflects something they want more in their life. So my client today had picked belief. She wants to have a bigger belief in herself, a bigger belief in her higher power, that her higher power is there with her even when she feels alone, and then a bigger belief in the restoration of her relationship because her husband's doing all the right things. He is walking his talk, and at the same time, she's only known about all of his indiscretions for about 8 months, so she's still afraid to trust, and I told her that's normal. So she wants to gain more of that belief this year. Now, I'm going to ask you, what would your word be for 2019 to put more into your life?
Peace. Peace.
Oh, that's a good one. All right, peace. And I oftentimes get serenity, so I get that so much. Kat Clark, thank you so much for sharing your wisdom. Keep us posted on the other books, and you're really helping partners. You're giving back, and truly, that's what life's all about. So thank you again from the bottom of my heart.
Oh, you're welcome, and God has given so much to me. I need to share the wealth.
All right. Make it a great week. See you soon.
Thank you, Carol. Have a good day.
You too. And again, to all of our listeners that tried to call into today's show, I'm just not sure what went wrong with the board. I just am so sorry. And you can always email me at carol@carolthecoach.com. So I'm going to leave you with a challenge. I'm going to ask you to determine what your word would be for this year. And then if you could, make a couple of printouts on the computer, post it on the inside of a medicine cabinet, put it on your visor. Do something that reminds you of what that word needs to be. And email me and let me know what the word is. I always get a kick out of that when I get to find out what my listening audience is working on. You're listening to Betrayal Recovery Radio. I'm Carol Jurgensen-Sheets. This show is sponsored by APSAS, and we will see you next week.
For more information, go to APSAS.org, the Association of Partners of Sex Addicts Trauma Specialists, to find a professional in your area who is trained to help you after sexual betrayal.